Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hi.
Welcome back from Pesach. Today, of course, is Yom HaShoah, and I wanted to discuss some areas that relate to Yom HaShoah, to the Holocaust, give us something to think about. So how did you respond to the siren? Is it many of your first time? I mean, what are you supposed to do? I'm sorry? Mandated silence, right, yeah. It's not necessarily a Jewish approach, but I have to tell you, it does remind me of a certain solemnity in the stillness where you have a moment to think without any other distractions. And in that moment of thought, obviously thoughts trend to the Holocaust and its aftermath and where we are today, thank God. As well as the great... Yeah, I need the original. It's the colored one. Thank you. As well as reflections on the Holocaust. No doubt it's part of the gnut of Jewish life. Matil b'gnut. Mesayim b'shevach. But also there's a lot of greatness in the Holocaust as well. There's a museum, in fact, in Kfar Haro'eh called the Shem Ha'olam. Shem Olam, rather. Shem Olam. Shem Olam Atenla. Shem Olam Rambay Rav Avram Krieger, that if you have time, you should try to visit, because the focus there is on spiritual resistance and heroism during the Holocaust. You know, very often in Israel, because of the nature of the society, the political environment, that's shunted aside. You can tell even the name, you know, Yom HaZikaron LeShoah VeLigvura. Not just the Holocaust, but heroism as well, as if somehow the resistance, the physical resistance in the Holocaust was a major force. It was a force, and certainly it was warranted, but you can't say it was definitive in terms of the Holocaust. But Gvura takes a number of forms, not just physical resistance, but spiritual resistance as well. And I want to look at one tshuva that came out of the Holocaust. Many were written, all written by survivors, Rabbanim, who lived through it. Famously, Rav Ephraim Oshri, Min HaMamakim, he had been a Rav in Kovna and suffered brutally there. But here we have before us from a different individual, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Meisels. So he, in fact, wrote a sefer called Shut Mikadshei Hashem, the response of those who sanctify God's name. And this is taken from a different sefer called Shar Machmadim, a story that he told. And it not only puts us into the cruel ambiance of the Holocaust, but it shows you the greatness that inheres in Jews, including people your age, you know, older teenagers and the like. Who was Rav Tzvi Hirsch Meisels? See, he was a Rav, Rosh Yeshiva. First he lived in Galicia, and then in the 1930s he became the Rav in Weizen in Hungary. So he was known as the Weizen Rav, and as you know, Hungarian Jewry were really the last to suffer during the Holocaust. They were only invaded by the Germans in March of 1944. I mean, they lived under a dictatorship before that was cooperating with the Nazis, but there are very few deportations. And if there were, mainly to labor camps. But when the Nazis came in March of 1944, they found Nebuchadnezzar's tranche of remaining Jews, some 800,000 Jews, and Hungarian Jews became the last major group of Jews to be exterminated during the Holocaust. Probably close to 650,000-700,000 Hungarian Jews were murdered in the course of roughly 6 months. So in the summer of 1944, the spring and summer, Auschwitz was working overtime. One of the people that was deported was Rav Tzvi Hirsch Meisels with his wife and children as well. His wife and six of his children were murdered immediately, and he eventually survived, but with a number of his children as well. After the war, he became the Rav in Bergen-Belsen, and then he came to America. He founded a yeshiva appropriately named Sheirit Yisrael, with the help of his brother-in-law, who was the Baba Varebi, and then he established a shul and yeshiva in Chicago, where he spent most of his life. He died in 1974. Mm-hmm. There's one famous trofa that he wrote, I mean, many famous ones, but one famous story that you hear told very often this time of year was about... on Rosh Hashanah in 1944, he had smuggled a shofar into the camps, and under threat of death, at the pleading of bunk by bunk, he went to blow shofar. Each time, I mean, shofar makes noise, each time he could have been turned in, not so much by the SS, because they didn't walk around in the camp during the day, but by the kapos. It was obviously a violation of the law. But he knew, of course, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Tkei Shofar. But nonetheless, he felt in the circumstances that to blow shofar and to give hope to the Jews, or at least solace to those who were about to be murdered, he felt it was worth it. His son pleaded with him, "Don't turn me into a Yatom," and his father explained to him why he thought it was necessary. The Nazis would come out at night and torch Shki, and yet got into all the bunks. And had he been inside, he would have been killed. And nonetheless, he did it. But on this, so the story goes that before he blew, he started saying, "Min ametzar karati ka anani b'merachav ka." Would you think of the words, "Min ametzar, from the depths, I've called out to you." And all the kids he was blowing for started to cry. And they begged him for a drasha. And these were kids, we'll see in a moment, were about to be executed. And he said to them, "Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagenu." What's kesel? So we blow the shofar, the time of the month, the moon is mitkaseh, it's covered, we can't see it. Rosh Chodesh, the new moon. So he said, "B'kesel yom chagenu," he told these boys, "even though Hashem is hidden, b'kesel, we still seek His mercy." And they davened, and what happened then is this story. It's really the exact same day. So if you turn to the sheet, this is from a Sefer Shar Machmadim, and it tells a story. We'll read a lot of it, but some of it I'll do also orally as well. And he starts by placing us into the context of what's happening. Yishtomu ha'dorot v'itoro levavot. The generation will be astounded, and the hearts aroused. L'shiv lebanim alavot. When I tell you this exalted event that he himself saw in Auschwitz, b'yom Rosh Hashanah v'simchat Torah, on those 2 days, et godo misirat ha'nefesh v'kiddush Hashem shel 1,400 bachurim tzirim b'nei yudal yudchet shanim, 1,400 Jewish boys aged 14 to 18 shenivcharu b'yom erev Rosh Hashanah b'selektzia. They were chosen in selection for death, liot ola al mokda l'saref al kiddush Hashem. So mokeda, of course, references the mizbeach. He uses, instead of saying the gas chamber, although I guess it is resonant of crematoria as well. And he said he didn't come to expand on all these stories because there's not enough ink and paper in the world to write all these stories, and everyone writes according to his own interpretation. But here in his Sefer Mikadshei Hashem, Asher Einai Re'u V'lo Zar, he tells this story that he saw, no one else, Mitoch Yam Shel Sipurim Moraot, from amidst the sea of stories and events, Asher Nechratu B'Libi V'Mochi, that are penetrating, being carved into his heart and his mind, that passed through his head all the time he was under the enslavement of the Nazis. So he says as follows: Hinei be'erev Rosh Hashanah nikbitzu v'nekochei Hashem ha'natzim shlicheyem b'machaneh. Erev Rosh Hashanah, there was a gathering of the Nazis and their assistants, and they gathered together bachurim tzirim, 18 and younger, young boys, 18 younger teenagers. They're scattered about camps. They could stay with their parents, or they're just sent to other camps. And here the Nazis were rounding them up, so all the teens should be in one place. Others had found, he says, reasons or excuses or pretexts to find, to be able to escape the Shevet HaBikoret of the Nazis and more or less be able to hide themselves. There's a total of 1,600 boys in that particular area. They assembled everyone, Al Migrash Reik Mechayab Lakim Shebemachaneh, and everyone knew exactly what was going to befall them, even his son, Zalman Leib, who was 14 at the time, She'ayti Be'Auschwitz, Nitzal B'Neis, Bezrat Hashem, L'Kach Shomim Anarim. So he wasn't taken. Actually, after the war, he remarried, had another, I think, four or six children. See, he rebuilt his family. See, here comes now the head of the camp, Rosh HaMachaneh HaTzora Nazi, Yimach Shmo, V'tzivol Utchov Amud Al Eitz Ba'aretz, Rosh Amud Lashkiv Daf Shal Eitz Haduk Masmerim V'nekim Adalad. So the commandant set up a wooden pillar shaped like a dalid at a certain height, and the rule of thumb was, if you didn't reach that height, it meant that you were too young and too useless, and you would be sent for execution. And they all had a pass under. Since everyone knew what the fate was of those who couldn't reach the top board, they'd be considered too junior and be destined to be burnt. So you had people who would stand up on their toes, Shavru mitachat ladaf, kishdeshi gabar osham badaf. They would tiptoe so they'd be able to reach it. And once he said that he was standing watching, a boy did that. Natanlo makachazaka b'roshom akel av shel gumi shebiyado. The Nazi took his rubber trenchant and whacked him in the head, crushed his head, so he fell to the ground, bleeding. And of course he was sent to his death. Or he had just remained in kustu dechayuta, as is termed in the Zohar. It means like the last element of life, of animation. Still alive, but not really alive. And they carted him off right away. And after this test, nishru be'erech arba asar meot narim ala migrash, 1,400 left. And they were taken to a particular block, meaning barrack, which would be locked and sealed under guard, and they were not allowed to leave, and they'd be executed the next day, the second day of Rosh Hashanah. See, I'd imagine 1,400, let's say it's out of 350 in each barracks. The barracks are not that big, so yeah, they're crowded together. They were given no food or drink because by that time the Nazis weren't wasting anything on them. And each barrack was guarded by a kapo. V'hinei liyom macharat, sheyom alef Rosh Hashanah. Oh, so that was Erev Rosh Hashanah. The next day was Rosh Hashanah itself. Asher kol boy olam yavru lefanecha kivnei maran. And everyone is judged on that day. Hayayom mumam v'ucha. It was a day of tremendous turbulence, chaos, tumult. Word to mouth, really ear, mouth to ear. Everyone was talking about their fate. That night, late in the day, Rosh Hashanah, these 1,400 boys would all be gassed and burned because they didn't use the crematoria during the day. They only did that at night. During the day, they focused on the gas chambers. Many of the men had their only children with them, their only sons, the only remnant that they had of their families. Amongst all their relatives, or they knew someone, you know, from their hometown. Maybe they could save their beloved, their son, their grandson, their nephew, their close friend's child, etc. The kapos did not listen to their cries, or their tears, Lahotzi eizen nar v'yela, to let anyone out, mi bein ha-mesugarim ha-sheni dunim l'srefa. Anyone who was in those blocks, they were not allowed out. V'chayadu she'el ha-kapos y'al pirov reshim k'sheilev. And it's well known, most of the kapos are very cruel people. That's one of the sadder aspects of the Holocaust. You know, the kapos were Jews, and all right, some were nice, some were bali chesed, they tried to help, but most did not. Most focused on saving their own lives and became the willing assistants of the Nazis. I remember in Tel Aviv yesterday morning, stuck in traffic, I was listening to the radio, and this issue came up, and I never thought about it like this. Not only survivors that came to Israel, just digress for a moment, not only survivors came to Israel after the war, but kapos also came to Israel. As it turns out, Israel was one of the last countries in this part of the world to enact an anti-Nazi law. Why? Because the laws across Europe, if you are a Nazi, you could be prosecuted, or a collaborator, you could be prosecuted. And they all did that after the war. All the countries of Europe, even Eastern Europe, it was then under Soviet domination, and Western Europe as well. Israel didn't do it. Why? Because they did not know how to deal with the kapos. If you make a law against the Nazis, the Ozrehem, and this is that text of the law they did enact in 1950, Ozrehem is going to include Jews. Well, in 1950, Israel did enact such a law. That became the basis of the prosecution for Eichmann over a decade later. And then the police start getting all these complaints. All right? They saw the kapo who beat them at a wedding. They saw him in shul. They saw him in the marketplace. And the police were getting all these complaints, and they almost entirely refused to make arrests. The Kastner trial, read about it someday, the Kastner trial really was an outgrowth of this. Kastner saved himself and 2,000 others. He was one of the heads of the Unrat in Budapest, and he didn't even tell the people they're about to be deported and killed. So one of the survivors took him, sued him. One of the survivors accused him publicly in writing of being a Nazi collaborator. By this time, Kastner was a bureaucrat in the Israel's Ministry of Transport. That was a big thing. Israel has a Nazi assistant in its government. Kastner sued the guy, his name was Malkiel Greenwald, for libel. And trial took a long time. At the end of the trial, Kastner was vindicated. Strike that. Grunewald won at trial. That in fact Kastner, who defended himself by saying he tried to save Jews, he had no choice, etc., on the famous Kastner train that left Budapest in June 1944, among the 2,100 Jews was the Satmar Rebbe. Keep that in mind when you try to calculate how Satmar so anti-Zionist. Satmar was saved by the Zionists, which may have made him even angrier against Zionism. But nonetheless, Kastner appealed to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court ruled in Kastner's favor and fined a Greenwald, I think, like a lira, meaning 2-3 shekels. So in terms of the law, they did not want to find fault with Kastner. In terms of the libel, they didn't really penalize him that much. And while the case was on appeal, two Jews shot Kastner dead in the street in Tel Aviv. In any event, you had this very anomalous situation that it's great to go after Eichmann or go after Mengele or Martin Bormann, and there are not a lot of Nazis who came to live in Israel, like none, but what about Ozrehem? There were kapos in Israel as well. As it turns out, the guy was saying on the radio, it all came to a head during the Eichmann trial when one of the witnesses was a kapo. And Gideon Hausner, who was the lead prosecutor, later government minister, asked her questions that were almost pro facto, prosaic, straightforward. Like, what did you do for the Nazis? Why did you do it, etc.? And she said what she did and why she did it. She had to save her life, etc. And there was no attempt afterwards to prosecute her, arrest her. It's as if Hausner was sending a message to the establishment, you can't touch these people, history will be their judge. It's not for us to judge. Because the weakness in the argument, by the way, if the kapo says, I had no choice, I was following orders, well, that's basically what Eichmann said also. So how do you execute him and then leave all these others? I see he's a Nazi, he's on a grand scale, and she's literally under the gun, but the gravitas, the gravamen of the argument is basically the same. Anyway, the decision made to leave the capos out of it. I personally know people who would run into capos on a certain occasion, all right? Anyway, when Rav Meisel speaks about the capos, Rishoim, he knows what he's saying. And they were kshei lev. They were hard-hearted. They were stubborn. Psolat shebipsolat mirishei amenu. The worst of the worst, the dregs of our people. Ach b'mikre halazeya gam tanatam kitana tzodeka b'fiyam. He said, in this particular instance, at least they had a plausible argument. The argument was, like, each were given 350 teenagers that they had to produce for execution that night. If they're one short, the Nazis will take them. So people were clamoring, screaming, negotiating, cajoling the capos to release their sons, and they said they can't do it because the SS will kill them. Yet, what happened was, sof-sof, what worked? Money. And they said for a bribe, they would release a child. But what? And then to maintain the count, the integrity of the count, they would go out and find another kid. And they'd bring that kid into the barracks and release the other kid. One of those kids who had successfully hidden from the original selection. Vihine, left side. Vihine l'harbana shima ya'ot sikume ksafim. O chatichot zavo margolio tamum atmonim. There are many people, many Hungarians still had valuables with them. Gold, silver, jewelry, precious stones that they hid on their persons when they came into the camp. Vikibtsu bimsurat nefsh kol honam. They gathered together all their wealth, all their assets, and tried to pay the kapo the specific amount in order to free their child. Vikacha nimshach mecher secher mechev halazah. This type of commerce continued meshech rov yomadin leinei kol anashim shebemachaneh. All day Rosh Hashanah, this bartering was going on. SS didn't walk around during the day, only came out at night, and they patrolled the gates and the parapets. Amnam kamuvan sheharbei anashim balei asaga shelo ratzu lifdod et binam. But there are many people who also had valuables, but they did not want to redeem or ransom their child. Why? Because it meant the death of another child. Like Chazal say, my chazit, the dama didach sumuk tvei, dilma dama dama dawish sumuk tvei. At the famous case of Yehareg Val Yavar Shvicha Damim, the Gemara has a svara, not just based on a pasuk. That who says your blood is redder than him? Guy says to you, kill, A says to B, kill C, I'll kill you. Falchiz, B has to say, kill me, I can't kill him. Because who says my blood is redder than C's blood? Maybe his blood is redder than mine. So, I'll never forget one particular incident that happened at that time. Asher einai ra'u v'oznai shamu. My eyes saw, my ears heard. At that time, maseh halazeh misameil kudushat b'nei Yisrael. And this action symbolizes the holiness of the Jewish people. V'tmasrutam l'darkei ha'Torah kudusha b'tmimut ach v'etzartam. And the dedication of Jews to the ways of Torah and Kedusha in innocence and simplicity, even when they are enduring the greatest suffering. So what happened? Here's the story in number 3. Hine nigash la'ish yudi, shayon nireh l'yudi pashut mi'Oberlander. It was an Oberlander Jew. Oberland was one of the main Jewish areas in Hungary. This is Oberlander. Came to him mitvimut hadrim shalosh from likudar me'ela. This Jew came to him and said, Rebbe, Haben Yechid Shalei, have one son left, Hayakarli Mibavat Einai, the apple of my eye. So he is now in this barrack, nimtza shama betoch anarim anidum sreifa v'yesh b'yadi achol uftoto. I have the wherewithal to ransom him, because yet yadu alonu b'lishum safeg shakapos yitrusu achebim kamo. I know that if the kapos are going to grab another child, al kein ani shoel meharebi sheila halacha lamasa. I'm asking you, Rav Meisels, this practical halachic question, and I would like an answer. Lifsokli hadin, next page. Al pi haTorah imani rashi luftato v'kashay yivsok kein aseh. You have to answer my shayla. Am I allowed to ransom my child, even though I know another child is going to be killed in his place? V'ani v'shemi b'shami ashayla alaz. When I heard this question, ra'ada chazatni lifsok b'dinei nevashot. He was shaken by trembling, Rav Meisel says. And he answered, Yudidi Yikiri, my dear friend, how can I answer such a question? Even when the Beit HaMikdash existed, who answered questions of Nefashot? It had to be a Sanhedrin. V'ani kan ba'Auschwitz, b'li shum sefer halacha. I have no svarim, no rabbanim, nobody to consult. I have no yeshiva dat. I can't answer. Then he says what his mahalach was. Im hayaderech harshim akapos l'tzimi kodem nifdev achar kach likach herbim komo hayom akom l'tzadik tzat latir. If in fact the way of the kapo was that he would free the child and then grab another one, then maybe there would be grounds to permit it. Because after all, the kapos were Yisraelim, they were Jews, and they'll know that it's also, according to halacha, to do what they want to do be a dayim. So it's possible then, yesh makom litlot, she'ein ze berur she'chum nefesh acheb makom ha'nifteh. It's not absolutely clear, 100%, that they'll grab someone else. Maybe they'll have rachmanut. Maybe they're able to fudge the count at the end of the day. So if you release one before you capture another, then maybe there are grounds to say it's mutter, because who knows, maybe they will not capture another. And he discussed a machloket, what the two sides would be in this. Ulai berega chona yitoreb ben avsham yisraelit shalalavar yisu chomer kazeh. He mentioned a case in Tosfot about a woman who was going to feed her husband treif, and it's grounds for divorce, yotzei b'lik tuba, but she can always change her mind. So just preparing kosher food is not the same as being machil. Ochein ledavoni nochachti l'odat shedarkam shel hakapos likach mikodem nefesh achem me'amachaneh v'achar kach motzim chutz l'chutz haniftah. The problem was the kapos did not do that. What they did first, if they were going to have this exchange, they grab a kid first. So the number would be, the replacement would be there before they release the kid. So then already it's not. Then it's my chazit didama didach sumaktfei. And so he didn't want to answer. Ochein, second paragraph, ishanal bifchiya rabbah hivtzir bima'od. The father kept pleading with him. And he said to him, Rebbe, atem uchrachim ufsokli k'eida halacha bazeh. You have to answer this shayla. Ki shayla bo'eret latzil b'ni yichidi. It's a burning question. I have to know whether I can save him, kolo, that I can save him, because time is running out. Vani be'emet mitchanein elov. And he pleads, the Rebbe, Rav Meisels, pleads with his Jew, Yikirit samid levavi, heref mimeni b'shila halazod. Go away with this question. Ki lo uchal lomar lecha lo davar v'lo chatzi davar. I can't answer you. I can't hint. I can't allude. I can't answer the question. Mibli iyun b'shum sefer matzav norav ayom kazeh. Under these conditions, these terrifying conditions, it's impossible. V'umamshich latzir bi, he continued to implore me. Vomerli Bazel Hashon. Then he said like this, Rebbe, Hastos is irkent mir nishmatir sein umdeleisen mein einzig Kinder. Rebbe, he said, if you can't permit me to save my only child is aznisht, then I can't. Binich mekabel ba'ava dem psak din. Then I'll accept with love your psak din. That's what the father said. 5. Vani mitchanenu moche gamal diborav. And Rav Meisel protested that conclusion on his part. It's amazing if you think about it. And he said to him, Liber Yid, my dear Jew, Icham demach nish gezogt. Nish gezogt. Das ich ben nish matir ar kind areisi geden. Ich paske nish lohein v'lolav. He said, I didn't tell you yes, I didn't tell you no. Do not assume from what I said that I can't answer that it means no. Tambi ihr wilt azoi wie id volt mich tarnish gefährt. I just can't answer. So don't assume yes and don't assume no. I just can't answer. And the Jew keeps pleading with him, and he says to him, Rebbe, ich hab getan das teinige was die Torah is mich mechayev. I did what the Torah obligated me to do. Ich hab gefragt a shayla be'arav. I asked a shayla to a rav of how I'm supposed to act. Unken ander a rav is da nisht da un az ir kent mir nisht entrin. If the rav cannot answer me, das ich ment auf leisen mein kind. Then it means that I can't save my child. Is doch a simon? I asked him whether I could save my child. Then is doch a simon? Azir zekbe euch nicht fertig in der halacha matet zu sein. If you can't answer me, then it seems to me clear that the halacha can't permit it. Varn van as volt given mutter, belishum puk pikbuk, volt ir dar. Mich zibber gefret as es is mutter. If it was mutter, you'd be able to tell me without hesitation that it's mutter. Heis das bei mir vay psak din as ich mar nicht al pi halacha. Since you can't give me a psak din, then it has to be against halacha. Und das is bar mi genug. For me, that's enough. Und memela vet mein einzig kind verbrennt werden al piator v'halacha, and my child then will be burnt according to the Torah and halacha. Bin ich das mekabel be'avo v'simcha. I accept this with love and joy. Und ich taya garnished im ois zi leisen val di Torah. Because if it was allowed according to the Torah, then you would have said something. And Rav Meisel still pleaded with them, and nothing worked. And the man walked away. And on Yom HaDeh Rosh Hashanah that day, all those barracks, all those 1,400, were killed. And he ends by saying, "Vata chi yikiri bin v'hitbonan b'tzidkat uv'tmimut isha Yisraeli." Vein shum safek etzli shevaday asu devrei shazer rash gadol bepamayu shomala. He said, just under contemplate the righteousness and the innocence of this Jew, and I have no doubt that what he did made tremendous noise in the heavenly court. V'kutra brichu kineis et kol chel shmaya u'mesharte mala. And Hashem gathered together all the legions of heaven, v'shtabeach v'tbeer kivyachol, and boasted, glorified, ro bir shebarati b'olami, look at the creatures that I have created in my world, uv'tzedek emar lov, Yisrael asher b'chayet p'er, this is Israel in whom I am glorified. If you look at the notes, I won't go into it now, I want to just tell one other story. Number 6, he goes into a discussion of whether or not it would have been allowed. This, of course, he wrote years later. So he asks another question. Would it have been allowed let's say, for you to save yourselves, or me for that matter. In other words, if you're in a barrack and you escape, well, let's say you're on a, it happened many times, you're on a march, and Nazis kept, you're in the barracks overnight, you have a chance to escape. But if you leave and there's a number missing at the roll call, they'll kill 10 in your stead. Are you allowed to leave, escape, if knowing that your death will or might lead to the death of others? So in the discussion he has in the Acharonim, in the Truvot, which, by the way, precede the Holocaust, it seems that a person is allowed to flee, because Chayecha kod l'chavecha v'ercha. But if the choice is someone else saving you, then that's already different, because that someone else is almost categorically, imperatively, taking someone else's life. The tough question is, would a father be able to do that for a child? Because is a father to a child considered like an acher, someone else? Or is a father to a child considered my flesh, my blood, and it's like saving me? That was the question of halacha. Yes?
When you say chayecha kodem
l'chayecha v'recha, right.
That's even 10 people?
Yeah. In other words, the case of the Gemara of Ben Ptur is that there was one flask of water for two people. But if it was one flask for 10, it would be the same thing, even more. One, that's the Gemara's deduction. Chayecha kama chayecha vercha.
You have to save your life, or that you can't if you want?
You can. You're not obligated to. It's a chayecha kodmin. It doesn't say you have to. Yeah. Okay. So that same day, this you don't have in front of you, but Shar Machmadim, he tells this story as well. Also, it's a blood-curdling story. There was a boy there who was 20 years old, a big Talmud Chacham, that he knew, Rav Meisels, named Meir Rosenberg. All right? He was almost 20 years old. The problem was he was very short. And so he looked younger, and he could not make the threshold. He's approached by a kid named Akiva Manin. And this kid was a friend of a Rav that he knew, Rav Baruch Manin, Hashem Kam Damo. And this kid said to Rav Meisels, Rebbe, Ma yeh Meishula? What's going to be with Meishula? They're going to kill him. What can we do? Ha'itochen Meishula Yisarei Vanu Machshim? Are we going to Meishula, who is a prodigy? And Eloi is a kid, he's now almost 20 years old. We're going to allow him to be burnt? And Rav Meisels said, what are you going to do? What's the Eitzah? Nothing to do. Kenu me shivli. So he said, yeah, I have an Eitzah. All right, here's my Eitzah. I'll go in his place. And Rav Meisels said he can't do that. And the kid, this Akiva Manin, protested. And he said, no. Ha'itochein. He said, look at me. What's my life? Meishel is a big Talmud Chacham. Matmid b'limudo. V'olam od yafiku mimenu toela. The world gets some benefit from him. Me, what am I? Bar anochi v'lo eda. I'm a fool. I don't know. I'm an Amaretz. What do I know? Teenager. Eini shavek klum. I'm not worth anything. I've already lost my parents, my family. I have nothing to go back. Everything is gone. So why can't I save Meishel by giving my life? And he stood in front of him, and he said, you can't. And then he kept saying to himself, Meishel Yisarev, V'ani anevzeh sheineni magi l'chapot raglo v'atlech ben achayim. How could it be? Meishel is going to be burnt, and I'm going to walk amongst the living? Ani hichlati lasod zo l'kaneis t'murato. I'm going to exchange myself for him. Af b'li she'omar li harebi hetem afurash. Even if you don't tell me that it's completely permissible. Rak zot levad yaftiach harebi. But I just want one thing from you. You have to guarantee that when I come to Shemayim, they will not consider me a ma'abed atzmo ladat, a suicide. Vani garti bo. So Rav says he yelled at him, and he said, I can't even guarantee you that. All right? Because who knows? He started to cry and said, no, yesh nafka mina. There's a difference between me and between Meishela, that he'll yet do good in the world. So if he exchanged himself for this Moshe Rosenberg. I think I read elsewhere that this young Talmud Chacham was murdered anyway within a few days, But nonetheless, Hashem, Himkom, Ramam. That is a story. These stories, by the way, of the Gvura Ruchanit, the spiritual greatness of the Jewish people in the Holocaust, they're not isolated stories. They are stories in the hundreds of thousands. And, you know, you should read up on it. It's sometimes it's tough reading, but you'll find a sense of pride in being a Jew. You know, how Jews struggled to light Hanukkah candles, to bake matzah. You know, they started saving scraps of wheat before Purim, and trying to arrange at a certain point on Erev Pesach they were to bake matzot. People starving to death would fast on Yom HaKippurim. And to make it worse, the Nazis knew it. So Yom HaKippurim is the only day they gave them actual meat to eat. They gave them more food to try to tempt Jews into eating. And yet how many Jews did not? I hear the stories. My grandfather, Shlomo, was a shaychet. He wasn't a survivor, though. They left right before the war. But there's an old klal that a shaychet who eats treif cannot do shchita because he's not trusted. The shaychim in the camps, what they would do, they'd put like a little piece of meat, a chicken, treif, in a cup of tepid water. And that would be a meal. And the shaychet refused to eat treif because he said if he eats that, he won't be able to be a shaychet. And he wants to survive and be a shaychet again, serving Hashem. And these stories, like the thousands of stories like this, you read those stories, internalize them. So, in the first instance, whatever tzart we have in life, they pale by comparison. But in the broader sense, to see the dedication, the sirut nefesh that Jews had under the worst circumstances, may we be inspired by their memories, and may we live to be zechuyot for their neshamot as well. All right, I thank you very much.